Hey listeners, welcome to the Spoil Sports Podcast, a show that's not afraid to tell you that Bruce Willis was dead all along in The Sixth Sense. In each episode, we'll be discussing everything we did and didn't like about video games, films, and TV shows. I'm Sean, one of your hosts, alongside Diarmid, and today we're joined by Patrick Dane to talk about Star Wars The Prequel Trilogy. If the name of the show didn't give it away, there will be some spoilers ahead. So without further ado, here's the show.
This is your spoiler warning.
Hello listeners and welcome to another episode of the Spoil Sports Podcast. Today we are joined by Patrick. Patrick, how are you doing today?
I'm alright, actually. Tired, but I'm okay.
That's great. And I'm joined by my co-host once again, Dermot Scannell. How are you doing, Dermot?
Not too bad. Not quite as tired, but, you know, getting there.
Yeah. And today we are going to be chatting about the original. I say the original. It's not the original, but depending on where you look chronologically, it's episode 1 to 3 of Star Wars. Patrick, what do you think of it? You know, it's not the original, but it was made afterwards. It's a very unconventional way of doing. Would you say it's prequels?
Yeah, they are. They absolutely are prequels. Like, they are. Really, that when Star Wars the prequels started coming out, that was really like prequels had obviously happened a lot then, but that was like the popularization of like, hey, we're gonna do a movie that happens before the other movies, right? Like, and that's kind of like, you know, that's kind of set the tone for all prequels going forwards, I think.
Dermot, what was your thoughts and feelings when you heard that it was gonna be an episode 1 to 3, you know, films before the original classics that we know and love?
Well, that's the thing for me. I remember, like, Star Wars only became a force within our...
he's already started a
joke!
Jokes! No. So it only really became a force in our household when we got the collection that came out, the special editions that came out, where George Lucas had gone back for, not the first time, to tinker with his episodes 4 to 6. And I remember watching them and going, okay, let's start up Star Wars. And then the scroll happened, then it was like episode 4, A New Hope. And even then I remember going, where's episode 1 to 3? And it was only when I kind of read into it and talked to friends about it and all that, everyone was kind of like, yeah, it's something that they've never gone back to. I don't know why, but... And then the news came out, oh my god, they're going back to it. They're going to do it. They're going to tell us what happened before that led to all of this badness and all that. So I was really excited. And then we got the first... I can't remember what came first. Was it the trailer or the poster?
I think it was... you're talking about the poster that has Anakin and
that
his...
That has Anakin, and then you see the shadow of...
Darth Vader.
Darth Vader after. It just blew my mind. And I remember that... you saw that... And then you saw the trailer, which knocked, I think, everybody out as to think this is going to be awesome. And it wasn't.
Whoa, that's fighting talk right there, kids. Patrick, what was your thoughts when you heard that it was going to be, you know...
I was super young when, the interesting thing about, like, Star Wars Episode 1, like, that was really, like, the start of, like, online... like movie gossip, right? Like, yeah, we didn't really have like your IGNs or, and I like Ain't It Cool was really the people who like kind of pioneered that stuff. So like I think hype kind of worked in a different way at that time, so it wasn't like we were all plugged in at all times knowing what was going to happen. So I have vague memories of like remembering that like it was going to happen and being excited because, you know, Star Wars had been a big part of my childhood. My parents loved it and whatever. And like it just sort of, I definitely remember going to see the first one at the cinema, and you know, as a younger self, I thought it was all right. I thought it was pretty cool little adventure, and like, you know, that through as you see these things as a child, right? Like, you're like, oh, this is so good. I mean, going back now, I don't think the first one's okay. Like, episode one's okay. It's like a neat space adventure, but it, like, obviously doesn't stand up to like episode 3, 4, 5, whatever. It's 4, 5, and 6. That's what I'm looking for. But yeah, like, it's all right. I think there's some like cool ideas in there. Like, Darth Maul's great. Pod racing, that's kind of cool. At least that spawned like an incredible video game. Yeah. and you know, at the time, obviously, I really liked Jar Jar Binks because I was in that age demographic he was meant to be like aimed at, right? Yeah. Obviously, going back now, that's harder to justify. Enjoy, as it were.
That's cool. So yeah, so for me, it was, we're finally going to see what happens before, you know, everything kicked off in the start of episode 4, which is, you know, Darth Vader being about Princess Leia being captured, and, you know, what actually happened with C-3PO and RTD2 for them, you know, just to be where they were. And I think the most intriguing thing, I'm not sure if it's the same for everyone, but, you know, finding about this, you know, this Anakin character, finding out what he was like as, you know, a normal kind of cool kid who, you know, wasn't actually a bad guy. And It was for me, it was interesting to see that, you know, he was still, you know, he didn't even have any powers in the Force during the entire real, you know, part of episode 1.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi and Qui-Gon Jinn kind of, you know, finding Anakin, you know, meeting, you know, Padme. And other than that, it was just all about pod racing. I mean, it should have just been called episode 1, you know, pod racing. I mean, that was the main draw to thing that I remember. Other than, you know, the Phantom Menace, yeah, Ray Park was a cool, you know, fight choreographer. Most people probably would remember him from playing Toad in the first X-Men film. So he was a cool martial artist. But I, looking back at it now, I don't really see the relevance for certain parts of the first episode. Other than, you know, you find Anakin, and we look after Anakin.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it actually probably makes sense that when fans went back and re-edited the trilogy, the prequel trilogy, into one film, I think there's like a handful of scenes that take part in episode 1.
Yeah.
And the rest of them are pulled more from 2 and 3, especially 3. So I think that's where the interest in the story was. Like yourself, when I went in, I was looking forward to seeing how it all started. And as I think I was 14 years old when this came out in the cinema.
Yeah, because it was 99.
Yeah, it was around then. When it came out, I remember being worried. I didn't even know this was the case, but I remember being worried when the film started and you got the scroll and it started talking about trade federations and things that I didn't really understand at that age. I was like, what is going on?
Yeah.
And then it got to the Jedi's, you know, the two Jedi's being trapped, working their way out of it, fighting all these droids, which seem to be made of paper. All of this kind of stuff, it sort of escalated. And you got to the pod racing scene. You got to the scene towards the end with the Jewel of the Fates blaring out. You had the fight with Maul. You had that whole ending. And I remember coming out of the first film, at least, going, that was brilliant. And then I remember, I think we got it on DVD or something after that, and I remember rewatching it and going, that was really good.
Yeah.
That was good. No, this isn't really good. And obviously I was just too young. I was kind of caught up in the whole way it was told, but even like a year or two later, it was already starting to go down, in my opinion, which meant that when the second one came out, I was far less interested.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think there's a lot of weird, confusing things going on in episode 1. I definitely think that George Lucas was trying to, you know, create, because he owns all, like, the merchandising rights. I think there was a lot of, like, hey, we'll make a ton of new characters and a ton of new toys and stuff. So I think there was a lot of kid stuff in there. And then there was also, like, a ton of, like, really boring politics as well. And, like, yeah. It was just, like, it's a very weird movie that has, like, cool elements and then like other cool elements that don't really work, like fit together with the other cool elements, and then there's just some like awful bits. But
yeah, so we kind of summed up, you know, our maybe not so much love for, you know, episode one. It had to happen as an origin, really.
Yeah.
But you know, bringing us into, you know, episode two, we've just gone from seeing, you know, like a 10-year-old Anakin kind of having, you know, a love kind of crush interest for a girl much older than him.
Yeah.
Episode two, now we have, you know, Hayden Christensen, you know, a much older Anakin with the same aged play in Natalie Portman, which was, you know, slightly weird at the time for me, because he's actually caught up with her age-wise and height-wise as well. Patrick, Attack of the Clones. What was that in a nutshell? Was that a much better experience
not
than episode
all.
One?
No, I think episode two is by far the weakest of all the Star Wars movies. I think it's a bit of a mess, and I think that the romance that the entire movie hinges on is dead and lifeless, and has like, it's not appealing, and I don't believe these two people care about each other at all. And again, like, it has cool bits, right? Like, and there is some like sort of weird cool politics stuff, and like they go to, you know, that Kamino section where, you know, you find out where the clones are being made and whatever, like that's all sort of cool. I think it just hinges on like a central relationship that doesn't work, which was like one of my main problems with it.
Funny you should point out the relationship thing was not, you know, it didn't feel kind of right, but it had to happen.
Totally.
Because of the story and the way it was executed. I think I've watched it recently, and just looking back at, you know, the development of their relationship, it was just a few scenes of them, you know, sitting in like, you know, nice kind of meadowy kind of mm-hmm. backgrounds and cool kind of backdrops and stuff that was separate from Star Wars, really. I mean, it felt slightly weird that, you know, this film was, you know, about kind of war and, you know, religion, like being force and, you know, politics, and then something so human for, you know, a relationship being in it, kind of felt a bit strange, and I wanted them to have a bit more of an effort to try and, you know, show, you know, a bit more courting rather than, hey, we're alone here, you know, we could be a thing. Let's be in love. And then there was that marriage right at the end. I was like, if this happens over a period of, I don't know, a few weeks, I guess the episode would be, you know, that was a very quick turnaround relationship and a marriage. Like, I'm not going to put it down. I mean, it has to happen, but I was expecting a lot more subtleness when, you know, like it is in real life. I mean, there is people out there that probably would get married, you know, after drop of a hat.
I think you're right to like point out like that really should have been like the humanizing element, because for me Attack of the Clones, the like, there's just like nothing to latch onto as like a person. Like, there's obviously a lot of stuff happening in it, but it's just like a ton of plot just sort of happening. And, like, you don't really have a dog in the fight, really, because you're not like, at all invested in these, in, like, the characters and, like, you know, Hayden Christensen. I really don't know who to blame, like, whether it was him or, like, the direction of Lucas. But I think that they kind of, like, botched that, especially as an introduction to who Anakin is. Like, he just kind of seemed like a jerk the entire time. And, like, to really, like, feel, like, the fall of this, like, guy into, like, you know, becoming the evil that he became. Like, you sort of still need to have that, like, you need to have that connection of being like, hey, I really like this guy. But, like, you know, in the first movie, everyone's sort of annoyed out of the little kid who was, like, super vibrant and saying, like, hey, this is pod racing and whatever. Yeah. And then you get this, like, super mopey teenager dude who, again, is equally hard to connect to, right?
Yeah, the moral of the story is don't grow up, stay a kid, be joyful, be naive, and keep pod racing.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dermot, what was your first take on episode two, Attack of the Clones?
And of course, still be a slave as well.
oh yeah, I forgot that.
No, for me, the main issue with episode one was there was no protagonist.
Yep.
There was no key person, as Patrick just said, that you could latch onto, that you could say, this is my guy, I'm going to follow, or girl, this is who I'm going to follow through this story. It wasn't Anakin, it wasn't Obi-Wan, it wasn't Qui-Gon, it wasn't anybody. You couldn't do that. The second one felt like, okay, now we're actually going to say Anakin is the person that you need to follow. And I hated him. And it was partly because Hayden Christensen isn't a very good actor, I don't think. It's also mostly because George Lucas cannot write dialogue. He is just terrible. You were talking about the romance already. That's well covered. Yes, it is terrible. But equally, there's the whole point where you start to see Anakin's dark side. You start to see him take on the... Or when he massacres the Sand People.
Yeah.
You've all of these different scenes that are meant to progress his story along and make him seem dark. And you get towards the ending when they fight Dooku and you get his arm cut off. You see the twinges of the dark side in him. But it's so poorly written that I didn't care. I really just didn't care. His character just put me so far away from the movie that I didn't care about what happened, which was really terrible because I honestly thought they finally fixed Yoda. He doesn't look like some weird puppet now. He actually looks like he used to look in the original trilogy, which was weird. The Obi-Wan seemed to actually be a better character in this one, even though he wasn't really given much to do, and I liked some of the other elements that they added in, but that Attack of the Clones was just a failure purely because the Anakin character didn't hook me at all.
Okay, right, let's spin it on its head. Let's do some positivity about it. if you could you know, pull out a few key scenes or moments from Attack of the Clones that you felt were really good. I'll go first. Anything to do with kind of the whole Jango Fett character, you know, the original, you know, where all the kind of the clones came from, you know, Jango and his, I think it's his, is it his real son or
no, it's a clone. It's a clone. It doesn't have the programming. It's basically, so the stormtroopers are all clones of Jango.
Yes,
but they have, like, they're tailored, they're sort of, you know, they have programming in them that we don't know about until the third episode.
Yep.
They have, you know, and they're built to be soldiers. Jango agreed to do this under the proviso that he would get one clone that was just a pure clone of him. So he could basically have a son, a successor.
Which is Boba Fett.
Yes.
Cool. So anything with Jango, I felt, because, you know, cloning is one of those subjects that, you know, most people, you know, rather not talk about sometimes because it's a bit, you know, inhumane. But he was a cool character. That, as well as, you know, seeing, you know, the Death Star plans right at the end, and then seeing Yoda, you know, having his moment in, you know, in Sun with Count Dooku right at the end, where we know him as a frail character up for like episode 4, 5, and 6 and episode 1. We've never seen him really brandish a lightsaber, and then him, you know, going toe-to-toe, well, the introduction of it, because that comes slightly later in another episode. But those are really some moments that, you know, rang true with me, which was really cool. Patrick, if you had to, you know, pull out a good couple of, you know, favorite moments from Attack of the Clones.
I mean, I know Dermot said, I do think that the Sand People scene is, like, an important scene, and I think that there is some resonance in there, because, you know, like, that, I think that is, like, one of the human moments of it, right? Because that is, like, the, oh, hey, he's just, like, a kid who's still kind of growing up. And then you get this, like, oh, no, wait, he's, like, mum's dead, and now he's going to go, like, wail on a ton of, you know, just, like, not innocent, but, you know, oblivious people and just absolutely murder them. Like, that has some sort of resonance to it. And I also think that, I think there's something to the stadium scene. Like, just from a purely, like, action and cool creature design sort of thing. Like, I think the, you know, when Obi-Wan, Padme, and, like, Anakin all have to deal with, like, one of those three weird exotic aliens. Like, that's sort of cool. And, you know, Christopher Lee absolutely goes for it the entire movie. Like, he's not holding back from, like, being evil dude, and that's great. But beyond that, I don't know. there's not too much. I mean, like, I think that there is a something to be said with, like, how, you know, especially with the Jango and Boba Fett stuff, like, just how the film kind of epitomized it tied the entire universe together in a way, and, like, that's, a lot of people sort of don't really like that, right? Because it makes everything feel a little bit smaller, but, like, the, you know, the, it is, they are setting up some interesting, like, personal points, and, you know, so that other things later on in the movies do make some sort of sense, right?
For me, I thought the elements of the start when Padme is being targeted for assassination, and there's the chase through the city, I thought that was quite enjoyable, or elements of it were. For me, the fight with Django on the rain-soaked landing platform just looked awesome.
Yeah,
you know, that particular element I really enjoyed. Similar to Patrick, I loved Christopher Lee. I love Christopher Lee in almost everything he was in, you know, but Christopher Lee in Star Wars kind of elevated it a bit more, because we don't get to see Ian McDiarmid in anything. You know, like he's in all of the episodes and six as well, where he properly appears and has that fight towards the end. But we don't have that dark element, that kind of boo hiss bad guy, and Count Dooku supplies that, which is good. And then we had that scene towards the end. I didn't like all of the CG elements because it didn't feel real, but even I couldn't kind of suppress that feeling of kind of joy when I saw all of the Jedi come out of the ships coming down, and you saw Yoda coming to the rescue. That still kind of made me, even if it was in my head, just kind of go, yay! And it kind of gave me a bit more hope about the third movie, because I thought this is going to be where the Clone Wars really kick off, and this is where it's all going to come back together.
Yeah, and I remember for episode two, sort of an anecdote, like around that time, my mother, I can't really go into why or how, but she had become somewhat friends with Ewan McGregor. And, you know, as a guy who was growing up and, like, deciding that he absolutely adores film and stuff, like, that was really, like, the first time it was like, oh, like, that's a movie star, right? Like, that's like, special. So, like, I remember going to the movie and being like, oh, this is going to be, like, you know, this will... I never met him, but it was like, oh, I know that guy. And, like, I think I did leave the cinema, like, oh, that was great. And, you know, I was certainly blinded by, like, you know, that, oh, hey, I'm like, 6 degrees of separation, right? Like, so I was certainly blinded a little bit there. But, like, as soon as, again, you just, like, the multiple viewings, you're like, I think he is, like, the one singular great thing about the prequels, right? Like, I think Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan is a very, very good character.
Yeah. As an actor as well, I mean... I was too young to watch Trainspotting, and apparently that was awesome. I've only recently caught up with it and thought, okay, I can understand how interesting and, you know, great it was.
Yeah.
But it was the Star Wars films that put him on the map for me, and I guess most kids as well. And he is probably the go-to character as Obi-Wan whenever anyone thinks of, you know, who was Ewan McGregor as an actor. He is that awesome guy now. But we must move on to the third and... I wouldn't say the final, because, you know, it isn't. But Revenge of the Sith. Now, the film that ties everything nicely to all together, leading up to episode 4. What did you guys think of... Did you think this film was a lot better in your opinion? I mean, it was basically one longer action film where they had to tie everything together. You know, they sum up why... all the Jedis are basically, you know, eliminated. They don't really exist as much. We needed to find out why Anakin, you know, fully conformed to the dark side, and find out, you know, why the Sith had become even stronger. Patrick, what was Revenge of the Sith like for you when you know, watched it?
Yeah, I don't think I actually ended up seeing it in the cinema, but or maybe I did. I don't know. Doesn't matter. I do think that it's easily the strongest of the three, and I think it absolutely is. It does focus on, you know, more the human element of what's going on, or like that's what's good about the movie. It's like, I at that point I do think that there was a little bit more going on between Hayden Christensen and Padme, and like it's sort of the movie that I don't dislike Anakin as a character the most. And it's obviously the whole movie is hinged on, like, his arc from, like, you know, being, like, an alright guy who's about to become a dad and he's happy and whatever, to being, like, going around and killing children at the Jedi training place. Like, it is an interesting thing. And, like, I do remember when it came out, I do remember every single time, because I think he has a choice at some point. Towards the end, where he can, like, basically stay with Padme, or he can go and run to Mustafar, right? I'm always like, don't go, you idiot. Don't go, because you'll be all evil and stuff. And he goes every time I watch it. He doesn't listen to me.
However loud you shout.
Yeah. I do think it's the strongest by far, though.
Yeah. Jeremy, how was Revenge of the Sith?
I think it was the stronger of the prequel trilogy, and for a few reasons. Number one, Obi-Wan is a proper character in this, and as you say, Ewan McGregor is an awesome actor and is able to, even though it's a CGI mess, he's able to pull out a character from that you genuinely feel you can latch onto. This is a good character that kind of can take you through the story, because Anakin, as you say, kind of turns during this. The reason he turns, and one of the main bad guys in this, is Ian McDiarmid's character, the Emperor, who is just phenomenal in this. He's finally given the chance to kind of come off the leash and kind of just go for it, similar to Christopher Lee in Episode 2. He's able to just kind of deliver some really genuinely good lines, and his turn and his reveal is done really well. And there's just elements of it that you finally get the payoff that you were looking for. You wanted to see Anakin properly turn, and this is when you get it. For me, the best scene in that movie is the Order 66.
Yeah.
That entire sequence is just so brilliantly done that you kind of wonder, George, if you could do this, why weren't you doing it the whole time? Why did you leave it until this movie to actually get it good? It almost felt like all of the first two episodes were preamble for this one, where it actually delivered what you wanted. So for me, yes, it is definitely the strongest one, and it has the elements that I remember most from the prequel trilogy. When I think back on the prequel trilogy, and when I try to think back of it in a positive light, all of that comes from Episode 3.
Well, it was a very emotional driven film. I mean, you guys both agreed that in Episode 2, when Anakin loses his mother, that was one of the main important parts, and that was, I guess, the most emotional scene in that film. Whereas, you know, all the way through Episode 3, with, like Dimrid said, the Order 66 scene, all of the Jedi's being killed off, and seeing Yoda, you know, having that moment where it feels like heartbreak to him. He's losing his children. And, you know, for us as fans watching Anakin, whether you loved him or you didn't like him, you know, succumbing to the dark side just so he can, you know, do some of the dark side Sith abilities to keep, you know, his wife from dying in childbirth. I mean, he did technically get tricked into joining the dark side. And the reason for him being, you know, becoming fully conformed to it is because now he felt that he failed. And that's the only way that he can kind of get revenge on everyone, is, you know, because of the heartache that he has. And it's a bit sad, and I prefer that it's not just because he's bad for no reason. We actually learned over the years, you know, the understanding of why he is like that, which I guess brings us to when it comes to Episode 6, and you see him, you know, become good again so he can, you know, protect his son. You know, it wasn't actually a menacing thing all the way through for him to be, you know, malicious the whole way through. There was reason, and it is a very good reason why, you know, he has turned, you know, he's bad. He felt like he failed. And I guess we can all kind of, I guess, relate to some points of that. You know, we become that kind of person who just wants to lash out when something goes wrong, but we're still good people at the end of the day. Patrick, if you could pick out a favourite moment from Revenge of the Sith, what would you say is the most important scene that brings you back to it every time you think about it?
I think, like, the most important moment in the movie is, I mean, it's sort of mishandled from, like, a directing point of view, but, like, there absolutely is something in that moment when Obi-Wan is standing over, you know, Anakin as he's, like, sort of burning alive, and he's still, like, he's like lost all of his limbs and he's still trying to like claw up, and you know, Obi-Wan looks down and he was like, you were like, you know, you were meant to bring balance to all this, and like you're like, you were the chosen one, and like, just like, I love you. Like, there is something to that. Like, he did see him as like a brother, or maybe even a son, and like, you know, you just see that like absolute heartbreak of him like realizing that he's actually, you know, sort of destined to become the worst thing since, I don't know, something bad. I do think that there is absolutely something, so there is a, that I think that's might be like one of the stronger like emotional moments of the entire prequels, because like it is that like betrayal of like, I believed in you, and like, you know, you've absolutely thrown it all in my face, and I was personally invested in you, and you know, you've absolutely stabbed me in the back. And on a side note, I also think that the introduction of General Grievous in this movie is quite cool. I think I quite like General Grievous quite a bit, because you know, a robot man who can like wield four lightsabers at once is pretty rad in my book.
Yeah. That's pretty awesome. Jared, most important scene or moment in Revenge of the Sith?
I suppose similar to Patrick, we have that scene at the end. It is where the whole trilogy kind of swings. That is the most important one. But for me, the one that always gets me, it's the one that always kind of just twinges the heartstrings a bit more than anything else in that trilogy, is that final scene between Anakin and Obi-Wan before he's turned. So I believe it's Obi-Wan is about to head off to investigate or to go after Grievous, and Anakin is going to stay behind I think be the lapdog of the Palpatine. Mm. But you see, you have them give that quick goodbye, but you know, as the audience, because you're aware of all this, that's the last time they're going to be together as friends. And every time I see that, you just see Obi-Wan walking down towards the ship. It's just, you get that little twinge going, aww.
Yeah, I would say the most important scene that it always, it's going to sound a bit strange, but it always gets me, and there's always a slight kind of welling up moment for me, is when Palpatine is piecing together, you know, Darth Vader's, you know, his costume, you know, repairing Anakin, giving him the actual suit, and, you know, Anakin Vader was, you know, basically asking, you know, how Padme was, and he finds out that, you know, she died, and it is more or less his fault. And then, you know, there is the helmet coming down onto him, and then there is that kind of silence when there is nothing, and you first hear, you know, that trademark classic Darth Vader kind of breathing, and it just reminds me of when, as soon as that helmet locks onto that suit, it's kind of like tying together episode 3 to episode 4. You know, this is the character that we have been more or less waiting for to see and appear. I mean, he isn't the most, like, one of the most iconic sci-fi characters kind of out there, and it felt like the perfect tying together and summing up of, you know, the original 3 episodes. And every time I see that, it's just the most iconic scene entirely for that film for me. And it's right at the end, and I enjoy it. But yeah, that kind of wraps up this Sports episode. Thank you, Patrick, for coming on and getting all kind of geeky and cool with us.
Yeah, always.
Cheers, Patrick. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Spoil Sports Podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions, please email us at spoilsportspodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter. Sean is at Sean Labode, and I'm at Dermid_S. If you liked what you heard, click on the subscribe button, and we'll see you next time.